The title is clunky, but the wine talk is smooth. You're listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Today, writes about wine, travel writer, educator, consultant, working out of Washington, and the founder of Black Wine Professionals. It is Julia Cooney. Julia, thank you so much for joining the pod.
Hello, hello, hello. And it's Coney like Coney Island.
I was going to say, right when I said Cooney, I was thinking of the boxer because I work in sports. And you know what the sad thing is? I've recently been doing all these interviews with people from Spain, and I've been destroying their names. I figured once I was back in North America, I'd be free of that. But clearly, I wasn't. Julia Cooney, thank you so much for joining the podcast.
Glad to be here.
Yeah, so a lot of places I want to get into. But first, let's just talk a little bit about your journey. I'd love to hear about how you went from writing about beauty, about being a legal assistant, to now being fully immersed in the world of wine. I'd love to hear a little bit about that journey.
Well, for me, it started, wine was one of those afterthoughts. It wasn't really a thing of mine until my late 20s when an attorney I was working with just did a food and wine pairing with the Texas barbecue. I'm from Houston. So I was in Houston at the time, and he was pairing all these crazy like Napa cabs with Texas barbecue, smoked low and slow. I mean, I remember it. I remember that distinct moment of going, oh, wine and food really does go together. Even though I studied abroad in France, the issue was like, it was cheaper to just drink wine than drink a soda in France at that time. So as a study abroad student, you look for the cheapest ways to eat.
Yeah.
And that was like having wine. So it wasn't about a pairing the way he taught me. And so after that, I just became really, really interested in it. Moved to DC in 2005. In 2006, I started a beauty blog based on all my travels. And I just love beauty products and beauty, not really makeup, more like fragrance and skincare, but the what went into it, who made it, the inspiration, you know, why did us, and fragrance was a really big thing for me, really luxury fragrances, who made them, who was the nose in the industry. I was obsessed with everybody who actually made the fragrance, not like the end result, but the person who created the juice. And so eventually it got so busy that I had to quit my day job. I didn't have to quit, but I quit to go freelance, and I've been freelance. It will be 10 years next week.
What's interesting is getting into fragrance. I mean, there's a natural connection there because so much of wine is about the smell. It's not even about the taste or the appearance.
Exactly. Wine is fragrance. That's what I like to call it. And for me, when I decided after 10 years of writing about beauty, I wanted to move into wine. I've been drinking and traveling more than most people who actually wrote about wine or was in the wine industry. And so it was just a natural progression to move really from beauty as in fragrance and travel to really wine, because to me, they all go together.
Do you find it all difficult as someone who loves perfume and fragrance when you're at a tasting or something? Because I remember when I used to work for a wine consignment company, this was when I was much younger, they flew me into Sonoma and they took me out for dinner and I shaved and I put on aftershave. No one said a word. And then at dinner, they looked at me and go, what's that smell? I'm like, it's aftershave. And they looked and go, how can you possibly be expected to assess this wine with that aftershave on? And I just shrunk like 4 feet because I realized they were right. So is that tricky for you?
Well, for me, I don't wear fragrance when I'm traditionally tasting wine or you go to those classes or anything like that. And it was very hard at first because I knew I couldn't wear it. And it was just a thought that I didn't feel like I was fully dressed. And this was like one of the first stories I wrote for Wine Enthusiasts was a perfume lover who can't wear fragrance now, right? And yeah. I had amassed all these great fragrances. And so for me, I wear it when I'm not assessing wine, to be really honest. Like, I don't wear it like before we had master classes, didn't wear it on those things, didn't wear it on media trips. I would wear it to bed, but I wouldn't wear it out.
Yeah.
Or any of my clothes, like nothing, never, never. And I still, if I'm really assessing, even at home, I don't wear a fragrance. But as soon as I'm done to like enjoy a glass of wine, oh, fragrance is going on.
Yeah, yeah. When you're done with all the study where you just, the wine just to enjoy it, not to get the third tertiary note from this Grenache.
Nothing about tertiary aromas, nothing about, you know, give me the grid. Does it match the grid? Is it medium plus, medium minus? None of that. When I'm done with that, it is just like, I'm just drinking to enjoy this wine.
Yeah. And I want to get into that at some point about just the enjoyment of wine. It's a lot of this podcast is making wine fun and breaking down some of those barriers because people get so intimidated by wine. But I want to get into, and I know you've talked about it before, so I'm sorry, but a lot of our listeners probably haven't. Karen McNeil was a very famous wine writer, and you wrote a letter to her. She had an article about the wine glass ceiling, or women in wine. In the wine industry, mm-hmm. beyond the wine glass, a new glass ceiling. You said that you read the article twice. You reviewed every photo, 36 photos, and you were disheartened to not see one African American woman among the photos. And you know, 45-year-old white guy, I see tons of people that look just like me in any wine publication or anything. So it's something that I read it and I had to sort of assess that I couldn't understand. And I'm curious just what sort of impact when you first read that article and you saw those pictures and no one looked like you, just what is that like?
Well, it was 2018. So let's think this is 2 years ago. It wasn't that long ago. I just thought, as many Black women I knew in wine, how did that get overlooked? And specifically for me, that I mentioned in the story was Dorothy Gator. I mean, this is a woman who for 12 years wrote with her husband a column in the Wall Street Journal. If you're talking glass ceilings, that's the first person to pop up, in my mind. And then you have Alicia Towns Franken. So you had these people, and it was more of why weren't they on her radar? Because she interviews so many people from different aspects of the business. And for me, looking back on writing that, it came at a moment of frustration because that was just something else I had been dealing with in the wine industry with the racism. And so it was like, okay, if everybody complains about this, but no one really says it, complains openly to the bodies that can change this narrative, then that's a problem. And that's why I did it. I mean, because I wrote it on my own blog, and that's one of the reasons I like having a blog. And it was more of like, okay, here are my points, and then how are we going to change this? And it started when a lot of my friends who were white in the industry tagged me in the story, and they didn't have a problem with it either until I pointed it out how many minorities are in wine, and they weren't in this list.
And then that sort of gets to just how tough is access. And I've read all these interviews and stuff you've written about, and you give very specific, you know, examples about, you know, you can't grow in this industry unless you're at these events, trade shows, tastings, things like that. And that just, you're finding that the access just wasn't at the level that it should have been.
It wasn't at the level it should have been. Like people, you know, you go to a major tasting, and being in DC, I would go to New York a lot, right? Every week and go to these tastings. And I'm in New York and I'm at a tasting for 5 hours and I may see one Black person of all the Black people in wine that I knew. And so then I would ask, you know, start messaging them, hey, did you know about this tasting? And they were like, what tasting?
Yeah.
And then I'm like, oh, so then this is where it's more of an access of like who also has these lists, who creates these lists, who is like, how do they find their research? And so that was really bothersome for me, especially when I spent I'm very fortunate that a lot of people invite me places and invite me to things, but it's also, there's enough to go around, I believe, in life and everything in general. And I think there's enough, especially wine, to go around where we can invite more people to the table.
Yeah. And then you tell a story about wine reps when they were pouring, they would pour more for the man than they would for the woman, and you would get the smallest of splashes, which, again, people are like, what's the big deal? But that's your job, is to assess it, and a tiny splash, and it just, I never even thought about that before.
Well, if you think like an average tasting pour is a shot glass, right? That's the best example. I was getting less than half of a shot glass. So it's not even a full swallow at that point. And so I would say something right there to the winemaker who was pouring. I am that person. I do not hesitate. And then I'll like take a photo and go, thank you. I will never write about your wine and I will never sell your wine because I work in retail. cocktail as well. And usually there will be like, oh, well, that's no, I'm done because I'm standing there with six other people.
Right.
And it's not like you don't have a bucket full of wine behind you. I don't want a glass. I mean, we're all there with spit cups. And at that point, you know, that's how we taste wine. You taste it, spit it, taste it, write on your notes, move to the next table. And let's keep doing this for, you know, another 2 hours. And I just would say something, but I would talk to other women, and then just women in general would get less pores as well than men. And it's just this, but women are the number one buyers of wine in America. So why is this happening at a trade show in America?
Yeah, that when I read that, that you're right. It's absolutely nuts, and it's all the biases, conscious or unconscious, that are there. By the way, getting off the serious for a second, how often do you have to tell your friends, and probably not as much now, but that yes, you spit it out, and they're like, "What do you mean you spit it out?" Like, I always have a hard time telling my friends when I was studying wine, started studying like 5-6 years ago. They're always shocked by that.
Everyone's shocked by that. And the funny thing of it is I still spit. Mm-hmm. Like with all these Zoom tastings going on in the middle of the day, like I could get no work done afterwards, right? I'm like, I spit most of the time except once in the evening.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes it's really hard when you're home and you have this exceptional wine and you just want to taste another. But, you know, if I'm doing maybe two Zooms and there's 12 wines total, I would not be able to get up off the floor. I think the hardest one was last year when I was in Champagne for a trade event to spit champagne.
Oh, how much does that kill you?
It hurt a lot. I did like an Instagram video, and I was showing people like they use like barrels, and they made spit buckets out the barrels. But you know, you're at a champagne tasting, starts at 10 a.m. You're going until 6 at different tastings. You cannot drink that amount of champagne. I mean, you have a lot of drunk people, but for me, one of the things that I always say is like, I can't be drunk. I can't be the drunk black girl.
No.
It's not many of me. Everybody know who it is. I can't be that person.
Do you feel more pressure to make sure you're professional, like the 100% yes. professional, where you can't even slip up just a little bit,
not even a bit.
You know, there's other people out there that probably 4 hours in, they got a bit of a slur going on.
Not even 4 hours in, an hour in, mm-hmm. you know, they got a slur. And I'm always a professional in everything I do, but I feel it very intensely when I am in a wine event. It is very intense of like how I act, from how I dress, from how I talk about the wine, from how I spit. Like, I'm very conscious. But it still doesn't matter because people are usually like, oh, my God, you've been to Champagne? You've been to Bordeaux? Like, the one in France? And I'm like, is there another Bordeaux that I missed?
By the way, Shib.
Yeah.
Yeah. That must, yeah, I thinking about it, when I tell someone, like, I went to Bordeaux for my 40th birthday, and no one goes shocked, like, whoa, you were at Bordeaux, you know, that's something that I've never had anyone say.
Yeah, and you can see the question marks, like, oh, well, how did you get there? And I've even had people ask me, how did I get there? And I usually go, United flight from D.C. to if you want to ask a dumb question, I'm just going to give you a dumb answer because that's how you deserve, you know, for me.
By the way, is there direct flights to Bordeaux? Because that is a long drive from Paris.
No, it is. I fly to Paris and then Bordeaux. Usually, I actually like to stop like a day like in Paris to go shopping and eat and see friends and then go to Bordeaux. I've learned if you're taking, you know, the train with suitcases doesn't work. You know, they got those little tiny spots. So it's just best to fly.
And Champagne itself is just such a one, like just the small towns and this, all the champagne houses on both sides. And it is so beautiful.
Yeah, I was supposed to be there in April, but this time I was actually going to drive from Paris to Champagne to really learn all the different villages, to really assess, like, and not rely on like anyone else, and just to really understand these little areas, these little producers that you never hear about because there aren't everywhere, and to find those guys and bring that stuff back. But hopefully next year, you know, we can travel again and I can do that.
Yeah. And you know, that's a good point though, for anyone listening to this who are studying, that you can read the maps and the textbooks and everything, but I remember, you know, I was in Burgundy, like just getting a sense of how small it is. And, you know, just it's so true that when you actually eyeball these areas, it gives you a better appreciation of what's in your glass.
Also, I think you see how hard they work. I mean, at the end of the day, wine is farming. Like, yeah. I mean, it's fun. It's a lot of work. Winemaking is hard. I mean, you have to deal with climate. You have to deal with pests. You have to deal with economy. It's money. It's agriculture. It's just so much. Go into wine. So I think when you visit these regions, you really get a sense of what exactly is happening, right? Like what is going on? Because everybody's talking to, and they'll tell you like, this happened this morning, the weather changed, and now we got a heat, you know? And you think like, I would know more about weather in wine regions than I probably do weather where I live, because I'm like, what happened in harvest? Like what's getting picked up and things like that. So yes.
It's so true. It's close to me in Toronto. There's an area called Prince Edward County, a lot of limestone, and it's great for Chardonnay and for Pinot. And they had one year where the temperature dropped in mid-May and it wiped out like 80%. So now wiped 80% of all the, and for so many of the vineyards. So now around that same time of year, I always check the weather for this area to make sure, like just it dipped like -5 one morning in mid-May. Hmm. No, so that one.
Well, I know. Think about Bordeaux and Champagne in France last year. Remember all the heat waves? Remember mm-hmm. it was 3 consecutive heat waves that actually just burned the grapes. There's yeah. nothing they could do but just burn the grapes. I want to say they lost 35 or 40% of the yield for last year.
Which is, I mean, just a crazy amount. How tough is it? And by the way, in a little bit, I want to talk about Black Wine Professionals, that website, and just where it is now. And again, the motivation, which clearly is all about access. But how tough is it doing these virtual, these Zoom tastings? How tough is that for you to do?
At first, it was kind of awkward.
Yeah.
The first week or so, I think everybody was feeling it out. It wasn't just me. I think the whole wine community was like, well, we shipped the wines, we tasted. Now I'm on them, and they are so educational. And I think why is because the wine makers have had to also do them so much, they've gotten better at it. You know, around April, everybody's a little rusty, right?
They're
yeah. like, oh, what do? We don't know what to talk about. Do we show a map? Do we show a vineyard? Do it, you know, do I use my phone? Do I use a computer? Where do I sit? And now people, they're the level of what they're doing is just really well done. And I do like it because I feel like wine to me is that subject that consistently changes and you need to consistently know what's going on. So I'm grateful that we do have this access that since we can't go to tastings and do things like that.
Yeah, you're right about the people must've been rusty. Like just the first time, okay, everyone pick up your glass. Like, because wine's also intimate, it's storytelling. Yes. And it's easier to tell a story when you're there next to with the group of people that you're with. So that must've been for you and for a lot of people, just a tough adjustment.
Yes. Yes. But now I'm like, okay, it's a Zoom tasting. I know, like, you know, pretty much, you know, we have one that starts at 2:00. They give a break, start at 3:30. Like, I think it's great now. I think it's a way to get engaged with a new way of a presenting wine. And I also think eventually that will help the consumer, because wine was so put offish to a lot of consumers in a way that Zooms now have forced them to go, oh, I need to take my wine where the people are. You know, because before it was only like my wine is Psalms, right? And it's distributors and it's maybe retail. Now you have to bring it to the people and so the people can find it. And I hope it stays. I really do. I hope it stays.
And hopefully that leads to just a better way in terms of talking about wine. Mm-hmm. Because, and listen, at one level, we all have respect for, we put it on the highest pedestal because you said how hard it is for the people picking the grapes and, you know, just the process. But then at some mm-hmm. point we give it too much mysticism. And, you know, like I feel bad. You could, you know, I'm sure you get it all the time when you're at restaurants and if someone else looks at the wine list and they don't know what to do and people get scared or intimidated about something that's supposed to be fun.
But here's the funny thing. You know why they're intimidated? Think of what a wine list looks like. It's usually bigger than a menu. It has more pages than the menu.
Yep.
It's broken down by country, then by regions in that country, right? So it's a lot. Even yeah. if you get one that has like by the glass, you might have what, 7, 8 wines by the glass, then you move to bottles. So now we're at least 20 different things I can choose from. And then, you know, cut that down to 10. And by price point, but I'm still only eating 2 dishes. So do I get a wine that goes with both dishes? Do I get a separate wine? And then I can't pronounce a lot of this, right? I know, like, but how is it going to taste? And then you might you know, before at a restaurant and get a Somme, and they're selling you something that traditionally you know you don't care for, but you're not ready to like commit to a glass, but then you commit to a glass because it almost feels like peer pressure.
Yeah.
And then you get it, and guess what? Most people don't like it.
That's a tough cycle.
It's a tough cycle. Instead of saying, okay, I know what I like, I'm going to try this, right? But it's different if you're a consumer. For wine people, we usually go, just give me something. I trust you.
Yeah.
If I'm a consumer, it's very hard for me to say, right? Because I've been a consumer. I'm still a consumer who goes, you know, before went out to eat. And I understand how hard that is.
Oh, yeah. And the worst is when someone just gets intimidated. So they just say, give me the Pinot Grigio without even thought about what else is on the menu.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, like, I hope we make wine communal again, because it's a community product. Yeah. It is not very communal.
Yeah, no, that's a good way of putting it. I'm usually communal. There's a couple bottles. I'm like, I'm going to be less communal about this one. But but 95% is very communal. There's a couple that maybe not as much. So I'd love to hear more about Black Wine Professionals, about the website and the genesis behind it.
Well, the idea came, you know, here in the U.S. with our, well, I call it a new civil rights movement that happened in June, end of May with George Floyd's murder. I just felt like I needed to do something. I went on Instagram Live. I felt really disappointed by the way the wine industry was not responding to Black Lives Matter movement, how they just really took a deaf ear, and it just really hurt. It felt bad to be in the industry when so many people were hurting already due to COVID. And then this happened. And just, I just felt like I needed to do something. And I just remember when I was on a media trip, when someone says, I don't know that many Black wine professionals. You and someone else are like the ones I know. And I thought, if I wanted to make a change, a true change, a change that also in my mind goes past me, then I need to create this database, right? Of like listing all these Black wine professionals I know who've been in the industry, who has these classes and everything. And I couldn't sleep. So at like 4 a.m, I get up, I'm like, okay, Black wine professionals. The domain is available. The Instagram is available. Might as well just buy those. And kind of took it from there. And I announced that I was going to create this database. I did not know when I said that I would have to create it in less than 3 weeks, because I got a call, an email from the New York Times saying we want to talk about this and we want to know when the database would be ready.
Right.
And I said, oh, well, I was thinking July. And they were like, no, the story is going June 29th. So, okay. And we got it together. You know, I had help from like two advisors. We put the website, and I mean, we went to people, and I mean, we're still currently now, we have over 200 people that have applied to be on the list. And the list is where I'm getting testimonials from people like, I was found through your list and I got a job. I was hired for a campaign project. I was hired for an influencer project from your site, even though technically I'm not an influencer. And I always tell people who talk about anything and they know what they're talking about is an influencer. They're a person who has influence. Doesn't have the same influencer mandate, but they were able to hire and work with. And so now somebody's going to be working with a consortium based off that list. And so to me, it's bigger than me. It has been, is basically saying, here's how you give people access. And, you know, like I listed more of their social media. I didn't list people's emails because I think emails are private and they can contact them any way they can. But a lot of changes happened, and I'm very proud of something that was literally built 3 months ago.
That's fantastic. And like, think about this. Like, I heard the other day that Leonardo DiCaprio and a Kardashian, they were not going to go on Facebook because they were protesting Facebook allowing for hate speech. And I thought, okay, well, I get what you're doing, but it was hard for me to make a direct connection of what positive that will do. But Black Wine Professionals, it's immediately going to have an economic impact because, as you said, now all these people that didn't get the access, now there'll be more eyeballs on them. If they can get jobs as an influencer, maybe someone buys a case of their wine for the restaurant or for their Buy the Glass program, suddenly your website is helping economically help other people, and that is a direct and just very tangible thing that you're doing.
And that's what I'm trying. I mean, it's bigger than me, right? Like, we're going to start with classes. and the classes are going to be taught by people who are in the Black Wine Professionals Network. They're teaching the class to anyone who wants to take a class. And these are people who I've reached out to make it fun, because at the end of the day, wine should be fun. And they talk the talk of wine, but they also make it fun. Like, one of the things that is a requirement is you have to list, if you're going to be talking, just say Portugal, right? What snacks are you going to have with the wine? I know you can pair with food. I need you to pair with snacks.
And what snacks would you pair with champagne?
Okay, so I have this really, I love this question. It's my favorite question. So if I'm doing a Blanc de Blanc champagne, I am doing Lay's potato chips, because Lay's has the salt that helps the chalk of the Blanc de Blanc.
And plain, none of this flavored crap.
Plain Lay's, the yellow one. Not the fat, and definitely not the bait. You need the oil and the salt. If you're doing a Blanc de Noir, you want Ruffles. Ruffles has less salt than Lay's. Plain Ruffles, not barbecue, right? Or you want kettle chips. Cape Cod, kettle chips, plain, the sea salt, the Cape Cod chips really, really work well with bubbles. And, you know, if you think that you, and this is a pairing that a lot of people could laugh at me about, hot Cheetos and Demi Sec.
Okay.
Because the sweet and the spice.
Yeah. Yeah. That's fun.
It's fun.
Yeah.
It's fun.
Could you go back a little bit, talk about a little bit of your wine epiphanies? 1998,
Camus. Clos Duval and Camus, yes. Oh.
Yeah, let's start there.
Okay, so you got to know how Texas barbecue works, right? It's smoked all day. It's brisket, right? So it's like falling off, and you got these like cooked, charred bits in this fat, and it's on like a sandwich bun, right? It's on a hamburger bun, not sesame seed, like more of like a plain hamburger bun. Very little like sauce. I mean, the sauce is on the bread, not the meat. And I try this Napa Valley Cabernet, and he's like, take a bite of the sandwich, take a sip of the wine. And it was just like an explosion of flavors that I wasn't used to, even though I knew about barbecue. I grew up in Texas, everybody, my family have barbecue, but it was like with the wine, it just did something else. And so for me, that was that aha moment, like, whoa. This is why people drink wine. This is why he has all these cases in front of my desk at work of wine. Because that's how it started. I was like, I can't get past my desk for your wine. And he was just like, because he had just come back from Napa. And then a couple of months later, he actually planned my first trip to Napa in 1999, which was very fun. I'm solo. I'm driving by myself. I mean, this is before technology. He was just like, you're going to take this one highway and just drive it to you. And I was like, okay. And, you know, I look back on that now and just I'm very thankful for those experiences. And that was an aha moment for me in 2016 for champagne. I was at a restaurant in Epernay called Combe. I never pronounced it right. It's in Epernay across from, it's on the Avenue of Champagne. Mm-hmm. And we had a grower champagne lunch. And it was foie gras, pate, caviar, bread. It was just everything that it was like French nibbles for lunch. And I mean, I remember it was a cremeuse sandwich with Savarin cheese and like this apricot jam and a little bit of arugula. And we had all this grower champagne. And I was like, what is this? Like, what is this? And I remember saying, hey, can I take some of this home?
Yeah.
And they're like, sure, you could just buy it right here. And I was like, oh, okay, this is what happens. And that was my epiphany of like what champagne really is as an everyday situation instead of just being celebratory. Because we were having lunch. I mean, it wasn't like anybody's birthday. We did a day trip from Paris.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's one of those misconceptions. It's like, you know, the champagne or a good sparkling has to be saved. No, yes. Tuesday is a good day to, you know.
As soon as I hang up with you, I'm going to pop a bottle of Ventos y Blanc Rosé. It is from Spain. It's not from the Cava Dio. They broke away from Cava. I think 2013. They're in the Conca del Ruil. Anois is like this Spanish name, but they make a delightful bubbles. Oh, yeah. Ventos. It's amazing. It's really delicious.
Oh, okay. So let's just nerd out then a little bit more. One sparkling, I think, that I always recommend for people is Cremant. I find in a lot of stores, the Prosecco that you get is often kind of basic and just a little too sweet. And just boring. Exactly. But, you know, Cremant, like $5 more. And it is, to me, it is a great value because it's not going to have all the champagne, but it's going to have some of that, but far cheaper.
Okay, so are you talking more from Alsace Cremant, or are we talking, we geeking out about Bourgogne?
I'm doing Bourgogne.
Okay, Cremant de Bourgogne. Okay,
yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. Like that's one I always recommend. I was wondering if you're more Bourgogne, Loire, Alsace, Bordeaux, or is there one that you think people should keep an eye for?
I like sparkling Vouvray.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I like sparkling Vouvray from the Loire. Sparkling Chenin is delicious. I think it doesn't get a lot of play because it's you have to do a little more research. Kind of got to ask. You maybe go to a smaller like store, to a boutique, kind of like a smaller store to really get it. But if you can find a sparkling Vouvray, you'll be very happy you did.
2003, was it a Chateau Latour you had? Oh, no, or was it a Margaux? What? 2003, yeah, Chateau Latour. I think you had one of those. Yeah, I was wondering if you remember that
with a friend.
Yeah, at a friend's place.
Oh, I remember that moment. I was at a friend's place, and this is a funny story why I remember that, because a year later, they gave me a case of that wine.
That's a good friend. That's a good friend.
Her dad gave it to me. Her dad was like, here, you can have this case. And 2 years ago, my brother gave it to a doctor he works with. And he didn't realize what it was. He was just like, it was pretty. It was a nice label. And I was like, well, what? And he was like, yeah, it was in a cooler at the house. And I was like, yeah, I know. He was like, well, the doctor was like, oh, your sister's into wine. Give me a bottle. He's like, oh, yeah, she has some at the house. I was like, what?
Oh, no. And,
yes. So he gave him a bottle. And the doctor he said, asked him, are you sure this is the wine your sister? He was like, oh, yeah, she has a ton of bottles at my house. Yes, she's fine. And when I asked him, I said, which one? And he took a photo of the, couldn't even talk. I was like,
oh,
I'm going to have to call you back and tell you. Like, yeah. He said the doctor was like, yeah, that, I know she didn't mean to give that to you, but it was so great. And it just happens to be his anniversary. So I didn't really let it go, but I was like,
That doctor better be on call. You got to be able to call that doctor whenever you want. You could have a tickle in your throat. That doctor should come to your house.
He should. But he's a really sweet guy. He's a great doctor. He's a great doctor, yeah.
I don't have one like that, but I remember once my girlfriend and her twin sister, they thought they were getting a Gugel Cote de Rhone. They got more of the single vineyard, like Hermitage kind of stuff. So there was it was a Lala, excuse me. From a Cote de Rhone to a Lala is what they drank instead.
Did they know anything about it? Like, did they kind of like geek out?
No. Here's the worst part. I do radio. I was doing morning radio. So I had to wake up at 4:30. So I had a couple drinks with them. And then I left them another bottle. I said, girls, if you're going to stay up, here's another bottle. And then I went downstairs the next morning. They were asleep on the couch, both their heads next to each other. They had gone through that wine, went to get another, and I get it because the Cote de Rhone, the labeling, the Gugel labeling looks similar. She grabbed the wrong bottle. And so when I came home the next day and there was like maybe a fifth of it left, I'm like, do you realize what you just opened? And she felt so bad.
Wow. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, here's one of those things, though, too. I've had like a lot of loss recently in my life, and I am of the fact now to start drinking a lot of things I was holding on to. So my wedding anniversary is Thursday, and I am pulling out 2002 Dom Perignon P2.
Mm-hmm. Congratulations.
Bottles of it. So it's going to be a great weekend.
Yeah.
I am drinking that. I am drinking Laurent Perrier Grand Siècle 24. I am also drinking a 1976 Frunar.
Really?
Yes.
So when I get there, where should I, where do I need to, what are your quarantine rules like in Washington? Is it 2 weeks I got to self-isolate?
Yes, 2 weeks.
Okay. Okay. Put me near your cellar, put me near your cooler, wherever. And I promise you, I will appreciate the hell out of all those bottles.
You know, it's one of those things, the beauty, that's the beauty of wine, right? It's like, I remember, like, I have this from my wedding, we had like a barbecue. So we didn't have like a traditional, you know, perception. We had a barbecue in our backyard. And I was pouring, and this is 2010, I was pouring Veuve Clicquot Rosé.
Mm-hmm. Ooh,
that was
nice.
Like the rosé, yeah. Right? But the funny thing, I wasn't working in wine. This is 2010. I wasn't working in wine. Yeah. I remember like, I was like, this is on special at Total Wine. Let me get a case. It's cheap. We'll have that with burgers and hot dogs. Cause it's like a celebration and Maryland blue crabs. Cause it's still crab season technically. And so I was like, this is great. But I feel like it's a full circle moment.
Yeah.
With the champagne. So.
Do you, when you travel, I bet you're like me, all your travel plans revolve around a winery. I went to New Zealand. I'm like, we're going to go to North Island, but we're doing Hawke's Bay, we're doing Gimlet's Gravel, we're doing Waiheke Island, we're going to, you know, really sink in and learn about their Bordeaux blends and their Syrahs. And like, I always try to balance it, so there's other things to do. But yeah, every trip, if I'm on a plane, there's wineries to be had.
Yeah, wine and food. That's like my thing. I always tell people I travel with a wine suitcase. It holds 12 bottles. Depends on how tight I can force the limited amount of clothing I bring between. I can get 14 if I sit on it. But yeah, it is one of those. I actually make, you know, Google Sheets so I can have it like offline. So if I ever need to sort it or send it to someone, they could actually sort it as well. But I do a sheet based on like just the region, what wines I tasted from there, because I try to make a list and keep track of every wine I taste every year. I started that 2 years ago, and it's just fascinating. And I mean, it's my personal sheet, like Google Sheets. So it's like really geeky. So it has like the grapes, the sub region, but it also has like the bricks, the pH, like,
wow.
That's my terminology. Yeah. And some of it, like I fill in and like, I always list where and who if I had it with people, where I had it and who did I have it with. So it brings me back to that memory.
It's your diary.
It's my diary.
Yeah. And the interesting thing about your diary is it's both really technical and geeky with bricks, but it's also who you had it with. So it's a personal connection as well. Like, you really cover all the bases there.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
And also the food. I list like what we ate with it. Like, because I can remember like, oh, you know, we were, and it's not always like it's a far away place. It could be literally here in DC. We went to a restaurant and we had, you know, we sat down and this was the one I had with a crab cake. Yeah. And just that remembrance of like, oh, okay.
What's the best thing with crab cake? Oh, what's one? You know, there's multiple.
Bubbles go with everything. I like Chenin Blanc. And I also like Picpoul de Pinay. Mm-hmm. I think Picpoul is, and it also depends on how the crab cake is seasoned. If it has a little more Old Bay, spicy, you know, but I really like it with a lighter. I like it with a Picpoul, especially if it's in a sandwich. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or Suave. Suave goes with crab cake.
Yeah. Yeah. You get those very linear, acidic white wines that aren't full bodied or things like that. Julie, before I let you go, obviously, you know, you're doing what you can to help Black women in the industry and more access, mm-hmm. and to try to help to level the playing field as best you can. Where would you like to see, where would you like to see the industry in, say, 2-3 years? What is a realistic, optimistic goal?
My realistic, optimistic goal, for it will probably take a year and a half to 2 years to really see that. But I want, when people see wine professionals featured in movies and shows and magazines, it's a plethora of colors, mm-hmm. and that look like the world we live in.
Yeah.
Right. When you're seeing all the food magazines or like even online, the online food magazines, the online, like they're featuring, you know, because not just like you can sometimes see they feature chefs, right, of chefs of color, but we don't really see people behind the scenes, right, as well. It's like, not that Psalm won a competition. They're just highlighting that song because he made a great restaurant list, or she made a great restaurant list, you know. Yeah. Just seeing the way the world looks in terms of wine, and the way it looks in terms of, you know, it goes with food. And I always tell people, wine and food go together, food and wine goes together, even though in our world we kind of like, they seem to be so separated, but I don't really have wine without food. And so, you know, it's one of those things that I want people, that it won't be an exception, it's just a rule.
Julia, where can people find the website? I was wondering if you, again, give the information for...
It is blackwineprofessionals.com. You can find that listserv there. You can find me on all social media at Julia Coney, J-U-L-I-A-C-O-N-E-Y, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and also have a website, juliaconey.com.
Julia, I really appreciate this. I appreciate you taking the time. It was soon after with Floyd as well. I decided, okay, I have lots of men, I have lots of women, but I realized, okay, I need to sort of expand my base of people because everyone's got interesting stories. Everyone has got cool stories, and I just want to learn more from as wide a range of people as I can. And I appreciate you taking the time.
Well, thank you. It's like Lou Rawls said in his song, we just want to be around groovy people.
And we want to be around the group. And we want to be around those people that have all that champagne or a case of Latour that was given to a doctor. I mean, again, I'm stuck on that. I get better a doctor than some other professions. Hey, Julia, I really appreciate it.
Yes. Thank you, Matt.
Thanks for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Remember, you can find me on Spotify, Stitcher, iTunes, and wherever quality podcasts are sold.
Thanks for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Happy hunting.